The Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Bemis as the Beaver.
And this is episode 193.
Snow and sun.
That's right. On the way in this morning, it was
snowing.
It was a blizzard. No, we were standing in McDonald's waiting for our coffee, and you could barely see across the street.
It was. I was on my way up here, and I was shocked that to see snow pellets and then snow. And now, as we look out the window, it's blue sky and sun.
That's right.
Thus the name of our episode.
Yeah. And it is. Wow, it is blue skies. It looks really nice out now.
It does. So anyway, the weather's a little crazy. I saw there was another location in the United States where they had snow, too. I don't know if it was Colorado or, I don't know. Up, I think in the Upper Peninsula of
Alaska.
Michigan. Yeah, Alaska.
Link Winnipegan or whatever. What's that from NPR's Prairie Home Companion? They had snow.
It's not what you said. Right. Lake Wobegon.
Wobegon. Oh, yeah.
Or Lake Winnebago.
Lake Wobegon. They had snow.
Winnebago at Wobegon.
Yeah.
All right. Well, anyway, so here we are, and it's our first episode after PangoCon. Well, actually, our first live recording, I should say.
That's
since
right.
Since we double load them now. And I'll go ahead and just start.
All right.
I think you remember the last episode I was talking about my computer, my limbo, my Zalreason limbo that
Your
was
desktop?
In limbo for a while. Yes, exactly. Well, I'm happy to report that the power cord worked, and I plugged it in and I transferred files. And then I realized I forgot to order a DVD drive for it, so I have no DVD drive in it.
Oh, no.
Well, you know, and I realize that that's kind of DVD drives or CD drives. It's getting kind of passe.
They're like floppies.
All right. So, well, anyway, so the $14 stack I just bought, are you telling me that
they're like floppies?
They're going to be coasters?
they're good for that.
For $20, you can get a new one.
Yeah, well, I was thinking of doing that. Because
an external one.
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
just as cheap. Run a Micro Center, pick one up. They're really inexpensive.
Okay, that's good. That's what I'm going to do.
So, the Micro Center is, what, 5 miles from here?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, the other advantage is most laptops don't have them. Mm-hmm. I don't even have one on my laptop. And that way, when you get a new laptop. And
they're not putting them in cars either.
Not putting them in cars. So, yeah. Then you have a portable one you can put in when you need it and put it back in the box and let it get dusty because you won't use it.
I know, but I tell you, the program I used to love to use with it is Handbrake.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when I rip my movies.
Oh, yeah.
Which my legally owned movies that I do rip from my, to take with me, the little files.
Yes.
When I'm on a trip, so I don't take the big discs.
You know, that's what I like Plex, is that I'll rip my movies, you know, that I have at home. And my new desktop actually rips them really fast. Mm-hmm. But then now I'm working at the university two afternoons a week.
I see where this is going.
Yeah. I'll be working in the lab, jumping between computers. And on the main teacher computer with it's like an 80-inch TV they have up there.
Oh, my God.
I run in movies up there. In May the 4th, I was there. So, you know, it was May the 4th day.
And, celebrated by someone.
That's right. I was watching the episode 7 that day. So
episode 7?
Yeah, that's the latest. 7 was the latest one, isn't it?
Episode 7 of what?
Star Wars.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not a Star Wars fan. I had no idea.
Oh.
Can I still be on the podcast?
Yeah. I'm a Star Trek.
Yeah.
Completely. You know, doing the Spock thing now.
Yeah. All right. Although, I did see Tribbles. I did see Tribbles for sale at PangoCon.
Yes.
I saw them.
All right.
It's Tony's signal to move on. Okay.
No.
Anyway, that's what I did. So I got that going, but that's whoever just said to go to Micro Center. Wow, that's great because I like going there and get an external DVD drive. That's exactly what I'm going to do.
They're generally under $30.
Well, I'm going to probably pay maybe $40 just because I want a good one.
Yeah, I mean, you can even get a Blu-ray player one for like $60 now. That will burn Blu-ray. I think the Blu-ray burners are like $60 or $70. They're really it's incredible. And those store are I think 14 gigs. Is that what a Blu-ray stores?
Something like that.
Yeah. So if you needed a backup, I mean, it's a 14 gig backup solution if you want backup coasters.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Okay. I'm a little older. I'm sorry. Anyway, so that's kind of what was going on with me. So, and by the way, too, speaking of the, you know, we had, I think before we started recording, we talked, you guys were talking about the Plex.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to take my old Inspiron, which is dual core 4 gigs, and I'm going to turn it into a Plex server.
There you go.
And here's my question though. I think, I can just, hardwire it into my, router and just have it picked up. It'll,
yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And Plex works really, really well. Because I have one. I've had one for a little while that I was playing around with and never built a permanent server. I just ran it as a VM on my laptop, and my laptop's not always on, so it didn't work. I finally put together a permanent solution server in my closet, which I have a server in my closet because it backs up my company. Mm-hmm. And so I just added onto it and put a bigger server in because it couldn't transcode before. I had a processor and it wouldn't run Plex, not effectively.
Right. Yeah. The thing that Plex, and the nice thing that Plex does, and that's why I use it opposed to XBNC or anything, that over the internet, it'll transcode down so it'll use less bandwidth. That way you can watch it, and
watch things externally.
Yeah. Mm,
okay. Well, because I am planning on cutting the cord.
Yeah.
My DirecTV cord.
So Plex is only, or Plex, and what's nice of Plex isn't only local. Media too. There's plugins or channels you can add to it that's live or web streaming stuff.
Yeah, because I'm to that point now where in 2 months I'm going to be without my quote unquote cable, which is DirecTV. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking, evaluating options. So I appreciate the input.
Yeah, you know, I really like the Chromecast also because you can cast your Plex movies.
Right
from your phone to Chromecast, and then and all the other apps on your phone. But you know, what's also nice is the Roku. We have a Roku also, and that's more what they call a wife friendly.
Yeah,
wife friendly.
Yeah, spousal approved.
Not sure I want to pursue that any further. But
no,
does that mean you don't have your porn on it?
No, it has a remote. Kim right. won't figure out how to Chromecast things from her iPhone.
Okay.
So she'd rather
she
have.
She won't figure it out?
No, I've tried to
Kim, teach if you're her listening to this, you need to slap him when he gets home.
If she's listening to this, I'll be surprised.
I know, she won't be listening.
But I've tried to teach her. Anyway, she likes the remote better. So that's what's really nice with Chromecast. And it has a Plex app, and it has all sorts of other things. She can watch Netflix from it. And so that's what's, so Chromecast might be a better, Roku might be better in the long run.
Okay.
Although I personally would rather just use a Chromecast.
Well, and I've got one plugged into my TV already, and it works great. You know, and I just finished watching House of Cards.
Oh,
that last episode was a little bit of a disappointment.
I wanted more.
Exactly. We're not going to tip it for anyone who hasn't. If you've binge watched it, you know what happened a few weeks ago, but
then
a little disappointing.
Yeah, but that's a whole other topic. We've got a whole House of Cards discussion.
Yeah, that's all right. Okay, well, anyway, moving on for me. So what's going on with you guys? What'd you guys do interesting?
I'll go ahead. I got to meet Richard Stallman. He was over at Oakland University, and he's as unusual in person as I expect him to be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know,
Is he kind of a genius guy? Is that your take on him, or just he's just eccentric? Because sometimes you can be brilliant, and you just don't have the...
He's very focused on, open source free software. I can't use those for an open source in the same sentence. He's Richard Stallman. He would be upset. But I'm pretty sure he doesn't listen to us.
I'm sure he does. No, but you remember that, Tony, you remember a couple years ago? Matt said something and it ticked somebody off and they fired off
an email.
An email to us and to Richard Stallman.
Yeah. And he was part of a free and open source free as in freedom kind of group, and included it in the on their mailing list and stuff. And Matt was not bending to their pressures.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure he only argued back more.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
he dug in and fought back, but whatever.
Right.
That's what we do. We're techies and we have opinions.
So I saw one of the comments on your post that you're going to meet him. Is he going to be barefoot?
Oh,
was he barefoot?
Of course. You guys know about that, right?
I knew that he kind of picked his toes once.
Once?
Oh.
That would be nice. That was what the comment was about. So unfortunately, and I will admit, he is a genius. He's done a lot. He's established an amazing free software.
And let me just say, I mean, in no way to disparage him. I just heard that. That's all.
Yeah. It's popular enough that if you type in Richard Stallman, it does autocomplete, eats something off his foot. And I'll leave it at that. You guys can Google it if you feel choose. So whatever.
I think he just did it to prank people.
No, he doesn't wear shoes during his presentation, which whatever, it's more comfortable. Then he took his socks off during the Q&A session and proceeded to put lotion on his feet. I think he just doesn't care. Actually, I know he does not care. Richard Stallman does what Richard Stallman does because mm-hmm. Richard Stallman wants to do it. Yeah. And I got to appreciate that about the guy, that there is no anything about him. Like, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. I need lotion on my feet like right
Donald,
now.
It's kind of like Donald Trump. You know, he's going to do what he's going to do.
But he's not an asshole. Sorry. Yeah. Anyways, Stallman, definitely genius. Great listener.
When you say he, who are you referring to?
Stallman's a nice guy. Right. Very nice guy.
Okay.
He was funny, candid, great.
Is
listening
he
to him. I don't think so.
Okay. That's all I wanted to know.
Yeah. I don't think anyone's ever told him not to do any of the things or behaviors he has. That's part of it too. But he, great listen to him. You know, we may not agree on everything, but I did laugh at some of the stuff. If you ask him to take his picture, he's like, well, make sure you turn off location tracking on your phone prior to taking my photo.
That's a great, yeah. My impression of him is he's just extremely intelligent.
Yeah. No, he's a smart guy.
And kind of quirky.
Very quirky.
I appreciate.
I think some people get more and more quirky because when no one tells them not to be quirky, there's no one to stop them from doing it. You know, Howard Hughes effect.
I think their norm, what they consider norm, shifts.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, but when no one tells you, Howard Hughes, they didn't mm-hmm. want to live in a hotel, so he bought the entire hotel when they tried to throw him out. Like, we would stop living in a hotel. Howard Hughes bought the hotel.
Yeah.
Different. Yeah. When no one's telling you not to be eccentric. But so that was interesting meeting him. Mm-hmm. Seeing in person his shtick he does with the, he puts an old hard drive platter, a big, huge one from an old 70s one. He puts it on his head and does the Church of Emacs. We were all in hysterics. He had every pun you can think of. Mm-hmm. And it's a whole like a comedy bit about how you need to be in a Church of Emacs, and he says vi vi vi, and he goes convert it to Roman numerals. It's the mark of the beast. You got to use Emacs. I mean, he does. I'm like, okay, I get it. Okay, Roman numeral 666. Yeah, I get it. It was hysterical.
Oh my
He
God.
Had so many playing words. He was hard to keep up with.
Wow.
And
he must belong to Mensa.
I don't know. He could.
You know, they love puns.
They love puns. So, but overall, it was a good experience. Meeting him in person was cool, and they did an auction of a wildebeest that he signed. So I have an autographed wildebeest in my office.
Mm-hmm. Wait a minute, aren't those the little animals that run around in Africa?
Yeah, the GNU thing, the logo.
That's what that is.
Yep.
I thought it was a musk ox.
Maybe I don't know.
I thought it was like an ox. A gnu.
Yeah.
These terms are apparently interchangeable.
Oh,
unlike free software and open source, which is not interchangeable, and Richard Stallman spent a lot of time on that topic. there's alternate names for this beast.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, and just saying GNU Linux is much easier than saying Wildebeest Linux.
Yes. It's much easier saying GNU. The most surprising part about the talk was,
I'm not telling you, it's in my coffee.
But we do have it on tap. The most surprising about the talk is I expected it to be full of gray beards. You know what I mean? The older generation. There was a few older people there. There were not as many as I expected. There was a whole lot of young crowd asking a lot of questions. And I had a discussion with
They were Bernie Sanders supporters. Come on.
They could have been. But they were a lot of college kids. They are really interested in free software, really interested in switching to Linux, which it kind of surprised me to have people who were computer majors, which is probably the majority of the people in there, who were not at all using Linux. And so I had some discussion. I'm like, you guys aren't using Linux. And they go, we've been really trying and want to. I'm like, well, reload your damn computer. Need some help? I'll get you a thumb drive.
Yeah, just get past that secure boot thing.
Yeah. So it was pretty cool, though. I had some discussion with some of the people there. Overall, it was good. I liked it. Mm-hmm. It was good to have the excitement a lot of people had behind open source. And they didn't agree with him on everything, which is fine. I did find something interesting. Someone asked him, because they were revising, I forget the name of the software, but it's the software that runs those old PDP-8s.
Dex PDPH?
Yeah, the really old stuff. So someone was talking about that. But Richard Stallman had an answer that kind of surprised me. I figured he would be into old eclectic software. And like, what do you think of the origins of this? And he goes, that's obsolete and no one uses it. That was his response on the Q&A when someone asked him about that. And he goes, it's not about it being open source. The cool, they open source some of that. He says, but it's obsolete. We're not writing in that language anymore, so it's not relevant. Next question.
Exactly.
He cut it really quick, you know, because I think someone just wanted to have an eccentric computer talk with him. He's very finite. When he stopped answering questions, he looks at the clock. He goes, it is time to stop answering questions. And he stops. There's no wind down. There's no.
Yeah, no last question.
Thing. He goes, I have to leave now. And he was very, when I asked him if I could take a picture, he said, turn off the location tracking. And as long as it doesn't interfere with what I'm doing. And he keeps packing up and I took his picture. He's just razor focused.
Wow.
I guess if you've been doing it long enough,
you've
got to have a stopping point. Otherwise you'll be there all night long.
Yes. But, you know, it was, like I said, great talk, slideshow presentation. All of his stick figure drawings that he uses for his slides are hysterical.
Oh, yeah. That's funny.
So he keeps it fun. So definitely recommend that. Other than that, set up the Plex server.
Could you see what he used for a computer?
Yeah, it's a, the reason he uses it is because the BIOS firmware can be updated to an open source BIOS. In open source hardware spec. I'm trying to remember he set it to, and it completely loses me. I think it's an IBM. One of the older IBMs where you could do that, where you could swap out the...
Like the ThinkPad?
Yeah.
Like versus, they sold it to Lenovo, and then...
And they still kept the ThinkPad name, but they've really gone way Lenovo. The other way.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Google failed. That was a quick topic, I guess. Google Fi failure? I guess we can call it. So
Fi-Fo failure.
Yeah. So T-Mobile in the Detroit area, this was a specific Detroit area problem. They had a network failure, and with their network failure, if my phone was on the T-Mobile network, you couldn't call me. So I contacted Google Support. First, I just didn't know what was wrong, did some analysis, and we did a lot of playing with it. If it was on the Sprint network,
and then
it
worked. Google offered him a job.
And Google offered me a job. But it took me from the time I hit message on the support, Google got back with me in about 2 minutes using the chat support, and they gave me a code to type in. And they said, this code will put you on Sprint. I said, how do I get it back to T-Mobile? And they said, real easy. In 2 hours, it expires. And they said, if T-Mobile's not fixed, just type the code in again, and it'll stay in there. As long as my phone was on the Sprint network, my phone rang. So interesting. Google support was great. They said, you know, with nothing we can really do to the problem, problems on T-Mobile, we've made T-Mobile aware of the problem. That's what they said.
Mm-hmm. So you, just to make sure I understand this, there is a preferred network on your phone? I mean,
you can't control it, but there is an app called Fi Spy, I think is what it's called, where you can control what network you're on.
You know, I do have that, and I was going to email them and ask them what this thing was, because
it's not sanctioned by Google. It's a third party support for telling you what network you're on.
Oh, it's Signal Spy is the one.
Signal Spy.
That's it.
Yeah.
Aha. Okay.
But Google has a code you can put into the dialer and it will force you onto one network or the other.
Okay.
And they were forthcoming with that right away and that solved the problem. I was like, wow. In the meantime, I was able to receive calls through my browser that worked fine and I can make calls from my browser. So.
Mm-hmm.
That's cool. Yeah. That's something I'm really thinking about doing this fall. I've already approached the wife about it, and she's like, hey, I don't care.
The wife.
The wife. No, it's good.
I've already... All right.
All right. Enough about that.
So the wife.
Moving on. What's up, Tony? What's new?
Right. I'm not going to give you a hard time about that anymore, but the wife.
My arm's getting better. I'm starting to do things now.
He's starting to carry his own stuff into the podcast. Yeah.
I'm at the point now that I'm not sure whether... It's my weak muscles or it's the tendon. Whenever I go to lift something a little bit heavier, I feel like a twinge of like stress on it. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether it's just because I haven't used my arm in a while or whether it's like I should let my tendon heal for a little bit longer.
I would opt for that.
Yeah.
I just think, when did this happen again?
It was over 2 months ago now.
Yeah. Well, what does your doctor say? Do you have a follow-up appointment with him?
That's this week.
Okay. Yeah.
So follow-up this week, and then he'll let me know from there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it's fine by this point. The last 2 weeks, it's really been feeling pretty good.
Has it?
Yeah. And then yesterday, I decided to work in my car. So
you lifted the engine block, and hey, no problem.
That's right. No, but I did replace the alternator,
I slept at a Holiday Inn Express.
Right.
Oh, no, I'm kidding. Great. That's good to hear, Tony. Good to hear you're back to normal again.
Yeah.
He carried my coffee.
I did.
You didn't drop it.
Well, I noticed you didn't ask me to help him carry the tiny web camera in today.
Oh, yeah.
I'm kidding, yeah. But anyway, I was very happy to help. Because, I mean, you know, when you're not, it's not a good thing.
Yeah, thanks.
Especially when you're a big, beefy guy like that and you can't carry a webcam.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to quit.
We'll ask Tony later.
Yeah.
Moving on.
Moving on.
I don't know. I mean, that finals is over. Or did I talk about that in the last? No, we were at PenguinCon, so I didn't get to talk about it. But I aced all my classes this semester, so that was nice.
Excellent.
All right.
Two classes. And I'm continuing to work at the university 10 hours a week as a lab manager.
Mm-hmm. Neat.
So, yeah. So it's like helping the professors a little bit with their making sure the lab's set up for them, but then also going through and you know, continuing the GA that I did last semester and testing and getting Cisco equipment ready for a few other classes, and then we have a project where we're replacing the production switches in the IA lab, and then we're going to be connecting in back into the university network. So there's going to be a little bit of a project there that we're going to be helping with. What's interesting that the their Dell switches that they bought, because the university bought so many Dell servers, they just threw in a couple switches.
Who, they, Dell just threw them in?
I don't know if, yeah, okay. I think it was Dell. That's what I was explained. And they're actually really crappy switches.
Wow. Well, the free ones are never the good ones.
Right, yeah, exactly. And which way, the professor said he peeled off the sticker on the front of the switch and it had Cisco right behind it. So, and they had these problems. Apparently, what they did to update the VMs in the switch in the lab is they did it over BitTorrent. So they had, not BitTorrent sync, but an actual torrent that, in their own torrent server. And, so every time the computers booted, because they were in deep freeze, every time they booted, then it would re-download or when the, kind of, they didn't blame that. Anyway, it would pull like 20 gigs of data.
Mm.
For 26 PCs.
And the switches would crap out.
The switches melted down. They had three of them crash and die on them.
Oh, wow.
And so whenever they called Cisco for support on it, they said, here's the model number. You know, it's right on it. Yeah, if you peel off that sticker, you can find it. They're like, oh, yeah, that was the not ready for production switches. And that's why we sold them off to Dell.
we made them put stickers on there, so you're not supposed to call us.
Right.
So that's why Dell gave them to their customers as an act of goodwill.
Exactly. So that was interesting.
Yeah.
But that's about it. I don't know, just busy stuff, family.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we should continue on.
Yes.
We want to hear from you. Call 734-258-7009. Or email show@smlr.us with your feedback and questions.
All right. So we did have a few emails. I'm trying to go back how far we need to go. What ones did you guys see that you want to talk about?
Well, I think there was one that we got, and I'm just attempting to open it now. it had to do with follow-up on, the man deletes his business with that RM. Oh, remember that?
Which that turned out to be fake.
It did?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think the guy actually did it, but he did it as a stunt.
Well,
PR stunt or something?
It was a PR stunt, and they, because I think it Stack Exchange is where that first started, right?
Hmm.
Anyways, it turned out to be the follow-up article I read was it was a PR stunt. Stack Exchange purposely deleted the post because, of course, became one of their biggest hits, so to speak, you know, really high up there,
really?
Which then gave people with the answers all kinds of points. And then they had to decide because they had to delete the post because the person then started posting it was a PR stunt, but they're purposely being vague about who the PR stunt was for because they didn't want to give them any credit.
Mm-hmm.
For pulling a PR stunt at their expense. But then they don't want the people who took the time to answer to lose the points. So there was a whole follow-up article on how that's supposed to work.
Oh, yeah.
Wow, that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, that was very fake. Recently that they said it was fake. I think it was some backup company is all they would say, which makes sense. I mean.
Oh, sure it would.
Because that did. I mean, that made all the big ones. Man deletes his entire server. You know, it's a great headline. It's very clickbaitable.
Right. Well, and that's why the listener who responded just his comment was about, you know, the fact that nobody really seemed to offer up a solution of running a live, you know, a live disk to go ahead and, well, not disk because nobody used disk anymore, right? That's what you guys said.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway, but just kidding. But anyway, running up some live distro to retrieve those files. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think what it was is that the discussion kind of ended pretty quick because then Tom, you told us then that it was a PR stunt. So then I didn't think there was much to talking about it much. Although we could have gone on to say, if this did actually happen to you, then you could use these tools.
Yeah.
And I think that's what, the listener, what, Michael was saying is that, you know, he's surprised that we didn't go on to give some kind of suggestions on how to fix it if it happens to you.
Yeah. There are, I mean, there's good recovery software out there, good recovery software for Linux. I've used RStudio, which is work. Of course, Test Disk is really popular. There's a bunch of, we could do a whole Linux thing on recovery tools, which would, hey, that's probably a good Fresh Looks episode now that we're thinking about it. Cause someone has deleted things. So maybe I'll work on that for next Fresh Looks.
I agree.
Not the next one.
Right.
Yeah. And then I got, or actually there was an email from, I believe it was from Brad, friend of the show, Brad, regarding CryptoLocker and how, actually it was an article, I think, on the IX Systems blog about how CryptoLocker and ZFS, I mean, it's, CryptoLocker is basically trivial to ZFS.
Yes.
As far as being, you know, retrieving snapshots and that type of thing. Although it seems to me that those snapshots have to be sitting someplace.
Well, no. The way, because of the way
ZFS.
Why don't
you talk about it, Tom?
This was covered, it was really covered very well at Michael Lucas's talk during PenguinCon. It was one of my favorite talks I went to was his, hey, Mike, if you listen. but he talks a lot about the ZFS file system because if you're rational and you want to set up and you got a budget to do this, of course, is setting up all the snapshots, doing them hourly, every 2 hours, whatever you think is rational based on the amount of storage you have, and storage is really cheap now. Mm-hmm. So if you have it set up on snapshots and you know when the virus hit, it's really trivial to go roll back to this time. So the virus hit at 4 p.m., roll back to 3 p.m. or whatever your snapshot is. Mm-hmm. So if you did some pre-planning and have this set up, and it doesn't have to be on a different server because those snapshots are controlled through, well, if in my case, FreeNAS through a web interface, but through the ZFS command line, they're not accessible to the virus. The virus is only seeing things through a file share. It's not infecting the FreeBSD machine.
Oh, I see.
It's infecting the file share from a Windows computer.
So even though, I mean, because CryptoLocker and other similar ransomware will encrypt things that are mounted.
Right.
Okay.
So it's encrypted the mounted files on there using the SMB protocol. So it's not breaching the SMB protocol to gain control of the server.
Not yet, anyway.
Not yet. Yeah. And not likely either because of the way FreeBSD does such a good job of jailing and segmenting HPs. They do a good job on that, won't lie. They may not get the wireless right, but you know.
Well, that's my. Yeah, okay. That's my ghost BSD little problem.
Okay, we'll leave it with ghost. Mary's had some wireless problems.
Yeah, so I agree that the ZFS is a really good.
Great idea for it.
File system to use it for, but it really, it's any kind of versioning backup system. We'll do that also.
And speaking of ZFS, I mean, this was a news item I was going to share. I was just going to mention that I believe that ZFS on Linux has hit the Debian repositories within the last few days.
Mm.
So.
All right.
Yeah. So it's nice to see. I'm glad my Linux friends are able to make use of it.
Well, when I spoke with the one of the representative from Canonical, I'll leave unnamed because it's not an official thing, but they're full in. They're all in on their servers running ZFS for everything critical.
Wow.
No, we talked about some of the other file system options.
That like ButterFS?
Yeah, like Butter. He says, no. He goes, it's there. Some people are working on it. What the majority of the dev team is focused on ZFS. It's mature. It's developed. It works. So, but yeah, back to the show feedback. Yes, that's correct. FreeNAS is a great, ZFS is a great solution.
And just to clarify, we're really talking about OpenZFS.
Yeah.
Not ZFS, because ZFS was originally owned by whom? Sun?
Was it? Yeah.
I can't remember.
Solaris, I think it was part of the, wasn't it part of the Solaris?
Yeah, but that was back when it only supported zettabytes of data. We're way beyond that.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, the only point I'm trying to make is that isn't Oracle on that now?
Yeah,
probably.
Okay, that's all I'm saying.
Yeah.
So hopefully there's no API problem there.
indirect listener feedback, but if anyone ever wants to contact me, some people who already know how, a few people have talked, I've talked about my Raspberry Pi and some of the YouTube videos I do. I own a company called Lawrence Technology Services. You can find me at lawrencesystems.com. And I've gotten a lot of people who contact me, and I'm no problem. I reply and help people who need help with their Raspberry Pi projects that want that Shredder project.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I have a video on it, and a couple people pointed out a couple of the bugs. I didn't code the software. My friend Phil did, and there's a link. I even in the on my YouTube videos, I got a link to him if you want bug submissions or want changes. He loves everything to come through GitHub. It's all public. You know, everything he does is open source. So just fill out a request there. I will. Because people message me the request, I'm like, no. File out the request with Phil. No problem. I sent them a link to GitHub. I said, even I know Phil. Me and Phil hang out, but Phil, if I ask him something, we're at the bar. He says, Tom, go to GitHub. Go to GitHub on your phone if you want.
Right.
Put it on here because right now I won't remember any of this.
Right.
Hey, and continuing on with listener feedback, yes. We did get something from Jay LaCroix. I think Jay was participated
about
in
Firefox and GDK.
Yep. Exactly. Yes. And so he.
A good clarification on that.
Yeah, I thought that was excellent too. And essentially it's this, it's that Firefox. Is that Firefox is now using GTK 3. It's always used GTK.
It finally moved to 3.
Moved to 3, yep.
And he pointed out for people having problems since the Firefox moved to GTK 3, which packages need to be used? What does it say here?
Mm-hmm.
He says, by default, Firefox, if you're on a non-GTK system, it's not going to download all GTK. It's just going to import in or come with the default.
Okay.
Yeah, he says if you have updated to the latest Firefox and it looks bad, you're probably missing the AWWAITA
Edwaita
theme. So he says you're probably missing that, and just by loading the Edwaita theme for GTK 3, you will solve the problems. So that's insightful, because a lot of people complain that it looked. That's probably right. If you didn't have a theme file loaded, it was looking for a certain GTK3 theme, and you have a bunch of GTK2 libraries and themes, it's not going
to
support it.
So that was easy for you to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you're right. That was pretty helpful.
Yeah.
So we had that email. And then I think,
we had one from John Dwart, I'm sorry about your last name, but John. And,
what he really means is he's sorry about mispronouncing your last name.
Yes. Yeah. Sorry about mispronouncing.
Possibly.
That's right. I'm sorry. Anyway, so he says that he wants to know how to be able to get a hold of Tom and or links to the videos that you talk about. So what I noticed is that Mary and I have a profile page on our SMLR website, but Tom doesn't.
Tom for Rush for SMLR profile page.
Yeah, so Tom, we need to create one of those.
Why don't you whip one up here in the next 10 minutes?
Yes.
So what's your YouTube channel?
It's the technology, but I have links to it off of my website. That's why I mentioned everything's linked off of lawrencesystems.com. All my links to the places where I post things. Mm-hmm. I'm actually going to be starting a personal blog as well, because there's some things I do that I want to blog about that aren't directly business related. Mm-hmm. I don't want to dilute my business stuff with personal projects that maybe people aren't as interested in. So I'll be linking that to there too pretty soon. I should have that done by next week.
Nice.
But in the short term, all my videos are posted on, YouTube/technology, or go to lawrencesystems.com and you can click on the YouTube link.
Right. And then his second question was the scripts we're talking about getting secure certs for your websites.
Yeah, that was just a Let's Encrypt.
Yeah, so Let's Encrypt, and it's letsencrypt.org. And on there's instructions, or you can just Google Let's Encrypt plus the distro name you're doing it on. And there's people that have written up how to's. The ones I usually follow are from DigitalOcean. I really like their how-tos.
Yeah, and there's a couple, because the Let's Encrypt one requires root. I have root or do not want to give root to that script.
Right.
So the solution to that is there is a, if you type in no root Let's Encrypt script, there's a few people that wrote one.
Oh.
I have root access on all my servers, and out of just convenience, I use the Let's Encrypt one because it works.
Right.
And then I just do it in a cron job to automate it, so I don't really have to think, and it just does, because I'll forget to renew things.
You know, that's a good point. I should look into that, because I have I have shared hosting.
Okay.
Where I don't have root access. And maybe if I run that, it'll do the auto update for the
It's supposed to work. Yep. Supposed to auto update the cert, because the certs expire after 90 days. They're not like, they don't have 1 year. They have 90 day cert. So every 60 days I renew.
Yeah. And that's the whole idea behind this, is short lived certs.
Yeah. And because they auto renew, you can't say, I wish they were longer because it's too difficult. They're not. The run script. The only tricky thing I have is one of the places I'm using it, I'm using Apache as a proxy for another utility that I use. Mm. And when you proxy something through Apache, the script doesn't work, because if you look at the way the script works, when it downloads a cert, it needs to upload a file. And if you're proxying, which means you're redirecting the Apache, it can't download that file and put there as proof that you're you. So you actually have to remark out the proxy, run the script, add the proxy back.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I thought about doing a write-up on how I do that. I do it by hand right now because I wrote the script and it broke. So yeah. I can't post my script because it wouldn't do any good. Uh-huh. It's not doing me any good yet, but it's pretty simple to do.
Mm-hmm. I used it on my NetHealth server for my EMU project. And the problem I had was if the server host name was named the same as the website, like I did on two different domain names, and the one that was named the same as the actual host name of the server crapped out. It didn't do it right. Oh. And I had to go in and uncomment a couple of lines in the config, and then it started working. So my thought is, if as long as your host name isn't named the same as the website, then you should be okay. But
there's some, there were some things I had to be right in the Linux, in the Apache virtual server setting, because you have to make sure that it's well defined there.
So well, yeah, I had the virtual servers, defined well.
Okay.
It's just because the one virtual server was named the same as the host name, it assumed it wasn't a virtual server.
Okay.
Or something. I don't know. It didn't work for like 2 days until I figured that out. But
but it works, and it's awesome.
Yeah. All right. I know I cut you off a few times, Mary, as you were trying to say something. Sorry.
You did. Oh, that's fine. I think we're just talking listener feedback.
Yeah.
No, hey, you know, we didn't really talk about our shirts, did we? Shirts.
Shirts. Mary's, or Tom's wearing it today.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you wearing it, Mary?
No, I'm just wearing
my the shirts we're referring to is the Sunday Morning Linux Review shirts.
Our official shirts, which we may end up, we may end up.
Yeah, we have a few extras, so we actually have like, what, 5-6 extras?
Uh-huh.
So if you want to buy one, let us know. Because we did a short run of them, then we have charged at least $25 a piece and then shipping. A few extras, just let us know. And you can even send the money via PayPal and I'll ship them out to you.
Yeah, so contact Tony just to see if we've got them still in stock. And if there's an overwhelming demand for them,
we'll set up a t-shirt shop.
Yeah. I mean, the nice thing is that on the front of it, it's got our logo, and then it says Sunday Morning Linux Review, and then on the back, kind of between the shoulder blades area, there's like a little circular logo. So looks pretty cool.
Yeah, and if you check out the YouTube video, you can see Tom's shirt right now.
I'm right in the middle.
Tom's going to model it for us.
I'm going to model it.
Got the runway.
I'm sucking in.
Yeah.
Won't last long.
It's kind of like a newscast where, you know, the people, the top half of them, you know, looks very, of course you look completely podcasty because you got these baggy shorts on.
I got baggy shorts on and sandals. And
by the way, too, walking in this morning, it's snowing out and here's Tom with his shorts and sandals. If my hands weren't occupied just carrying stuff, I would have snapped a photo of it.
I don't get cold easy, so.
Okay.
It's got to go below 20 before you put a jacket on.
All right. So I guess I believe this is the end of the listener feedback segment.
Yep. Moving on.
Yeah. All right. Moving on.
Distro Fever, where we cover the latest hot distro releases and news.
Yes.
And Mary, what did you see that's interesting?
Well, the one that really caught my eye for a number of reasons. Both from a humor perspective as well as just an interesting new distro perspective is Arya Linux. Are you Linux or are you something else? So it's that's the way it's spelled, A-R-Y-A, yeah. Linux. And actually, I believe this is a new release. It's based, and here's the thing, is they took Linux from scratch, and they have released a systemd edition. And it's and what is even more interesting about it is that you end up building this systemd version of Linux from scratch from a series of scripts that they have. Mm. I went out to the site, and if you want to live vicariously, in other words, you don't want to, you know, you don't want to build a whole system yourself, but you want to watch one get built. They have a 20-some minute YouTube video of the whole process.
Really?
Yes. There's no audio, but what they do is they've got a little notepad there that they have, you know, previously typed comments as well as some other little things that they do. So you can watch them run the scripts to build a Linux from scratch systemd or systemd version of Linux from scratch. Hmm. So it, that really kind of caught my eye. I just thought it would be kind of kind of something interesting to try, the right. systemd part notwithstanding. So that was the, I think that was probably the biggest one. And one that kind of fell off the list simply because there was a new addition at the top was the, and this is not a production release, but it's a development release in anticipation of a production release of GhostBSD 10.3, because, you know, as you know, FreeBSD 10.3 was released not too long ago. So I'm looking forward to GhostBSD because that's what I'm running on my laptop these days. Releasing that, and if everything gets kind of tweaked away in a positive fashion for me, then I'll continue to use it. Otherwise, I may switch to PCBSD. So yeah, those two, and then the Rebellin project. By the way, I don't know if you remember from a couple years ago, I reviewed Rebellin Linux, which was a nice little distro. I gave the guy $5 because for $5, Tom, you don't want to hear this. For $5, you got unlimited support. Anyway. And so he's also started Rebellin University. So for $5, you can take a course.
Hey.
And I think the first one they've got is MySQL or, you know, some kind of SQL-based course for using the database. So I think on the list, the two that really caught my eye were those two.
Mm, I see Raspbian has an update out.
Yep, new version. It supports the new Pi 3 that's out.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you know that Pi 3.
I have not tested because I saw, you know, the Pi 2.
Mm-hmm.
One Raspberry Pi is enough for me because I do everything on one. I just right. keep adding more things and playing.
One Raspberry Pi is enough for you.
You know, there's one project I've seen out there where somebody built a smart mirror.
Yeah,
with really a Raspberry cool. Pi. It looks really cool.
Well, explain. I want to do that. I'm going to plead ignorance for any listeners who don't know what a smart mirror is.
It's a mirror that you can walk up and do your makeup at and stuff. But it also will display like the weather and whatever. You know, you can.
I'm going to let that joke that joke opportunity just go about the makeup. So
right. Yeah. Well, obviously, I have to do my makeup every day. Yeah.
And I can't just ask my phone how's the weather. I need to ask my mirror.
Mirror on the wall. What's the weather?
Well, as I'm stumbling into the bathroom in the morning, I don't always have my phone on me. So my mirror will tell me. Or for, you know, like my wife, you know, when she's going into
the wife?
Yeah, or the kids, whatever, and they're going in, they can see what the weather's supposed to be for the day.
So are you planning on building this?
I am. I'm planning on it.
Oh, so man.
Now the issue is,
once you get it done, you're going to have to film it. You're going to have to film a little demo of this thing.
Oh, I will. Mm-hmm. And so what's cool is it has a, it's a two-way mirror or one-way mirror. And, you know, we're kind of like they use for the,
regular mirror?
No, not a regular mirror.
You're talking about a two-way mirror. Or you can stand behind it. You know those interrogation rooms where
I always thought it was called a two-way mirror, but every time I'm reading the instructions, everybody calls it a one-way mirror.
The kind of mirror that when you're on one side of it, I have it on my front door where I can look out at people on the front porch, but they only see a mirror.
Exactly. Right. So when I tried looking up the size of mirror, because I plan on doing it on a 32-inch TV, mm-hmm. you know, it's going to be.
I bet that's expensive.
Well, the TV itself is just a
regular TV.
It's a TV that actually has problems with it. But as long as I'm not showing pure blue, then there's nothing wrong. So on explosions that have like blue that flash on the screen, then the TV shuts off.
That's really weird.
Yeah.
So it's called the blue screen of death.
It'd be perfect for this project.
TV version.
Blue screen of death.
Yeah. The TV version.
But So I plan on doing it, but a mirror that size is going to be like $150 for a
32-inch mirror.
Yeah, something like that.
Wow.
So
you better make you better make sure this thing works before you invest.
Right.
Actually,
although I looked up on Amazon and they have just the film that you can put on glass.
Mm.
So I was thinking about getting just the film and maybe sticking it straight on the TV.
That might be.
And then build a little wood frame around it so it looks pretty, and throw a Raspberry Pi on there and it runs.
And then you're going to hang it on your bathroom. But here's the point that I'm taking it from there to the point where you're in the bathroom in the morning, so you can have a 32-inch TV on your bathroom wall?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, that's a quarter of the size of the mirror we have in our bathroom right now.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, we have a fairly large mirror in our bathroom right now.
Okay.
Anyway, so it'll probably go behind the door. I'll have to adjust it right so the door doesn't hit it. But
sure.
So I'm thinking about that film. It's like $12 for a 3 foot by 10 foot piece of film. So I can do a couple of these mirrors with one of those.
Or instead of a mirror, just get a webcam attached to a Raspberry Pi and have it take a selfie. And then you're looking at yourself and the TV displays you.
That's not a bad idea.
It works like a mirror.
Right. Anyway, but I saw somebody else do the same project with an old laptop. They just tear down the laptop and pull just the motherboard and the screen out.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can flip it around and lay it on top of each other and then put it inside a frame and do the same thing with that. Yes. And I have like 3 old laptops sitting around. Mm-hmm. So on a smaller scale,
mm-hmm.
I'll probably build a couple out of that and make sure it works.
And with the new version of the Raspbian project, you got all the tools you need.
Oh, but and that's what I was saying with Raspberry Pi 3. It has Wi-Fi built in. So I don't have to buy any extra things. Really, I don't even have to buy a power brick because the TV has USB power out.
Oh, awesome.
And so it's just one power going from the TV to the wall, and then everything else is all inside the case.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I really want to do it.
Sounds impressive.
Yeah. Anyway, that was all about Raspbian, wasn't it? one thing I
can
saw.
Can you tell what we're excited about?
Right. There's a development version of Fedora beta is out.
Mm-hmm.
And they've already.
So what's got you going on that?
Well, they've already released the message saying that production's going to be delayed.
I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, it was something like it's supposed to be June.
We're not hating on Fedora. We're just having a little fun.
right. It's funny to say it, but I'm totally in the camp of why they delay it. It should be a stable release.
Yeah.
It should be. Believe me, I'm in that camp too. It's just sort of funny that it tends to happen that way when others don't. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking to myself, when you're that bleeding edge, maybe it makes sense to not really, just say, hey, we'll release no distro before it's time or something like that. Or, just have it, not put a release date out there.
Right.
To be determined.
Yeah, do kind of like what Debian does.
Yeah.
Sometime in the next 2 years, we might have a release ready.
Kind of related, and I have a news topic about it, but because we're at the LTS support with, the 1604 series,
mm-hmm.
Not everything's quite as supported. I'm going to cover that a little more in news. I did not know this, and it's something I'm learning about how Ubuntu does their long-term support.
All right.
So.
Because
I see that we have the new.
So stay with us, listeners.
Stay with us, listeners. There's some interesting things and there's some ways you can mitigate it.
All right.
So the word interesting here isn't necessarily interesting in the way that we would normally think interesting. Because you use the word mitigate after it.
Yes. If you care about security.
Okay. Is it another Amazon lens?
No.
Okay. All right. Right. Okay, so any other, and actually what just popped up on the list, too, is Linhess, which is a home media server.
Arch-based.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, so much for that. I guess we're not that interested and excited, but no.
It says it's a fork of the Plex Home Theater.
I wonder if it's, I think it used to be, remember Knot Myth? Remember Knopix? Knot Myth? Well, this is the old Knot Myth project.
Are you sure?
Yeah. Yes, I am. I researched it.
Okay. All right, cool.
While you guys were bantering, I researched. So, anyway, I just wanted to mention that. So, all right. Okay.
Anything going on?
Tech news and views.
All right. I miss our little thing.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that. They actually looked that up and stick it back
you
in.
You know what, Tom, what we used to have? Yeah, the Morse code that just said tech news and views. And
yeah, it actually Morse said code. Tech news. And the,
I
and
bet
the
we have enough ham radio listeners that they would go, hey.
I think one of our listeners sent it to us. Yeah,
he made it and sent it to
us. He did. He did.
There's a big crossover between Linux people and ham radio all the time.
Oh, yeah. Okay. You know, actually, when I picked you up this morning, I was listening to Linux and the Ham Shack.
There you go. So,
yeah.
And then some of us are just hams. All right. Who wants to go first?
I can because I have the, we'll call right about what I was talking about.
Wait a minute. I think you're going to probably cover all the ones I have.
You want to go first? Go ahead.
All right. Just a couple quick ones here. Google wants to put a camera in your eye. There are two tech giants that have filed patents to make your eyes their own. Sony. DRM Sony.
Yes.
So just think about that. You're not going to own what you see.
Yeah.
And Google, they both delivered plans for cameras that you would wear on or in your eyes. Now, the primary purpose of the devices is your own recording. The implication of a connected camera recording what you see means that others would have access to your vision.
I can see interesting points, but I wouldn't want that as an implant.
I wouldn't either. I would want complete control of it.
If it was a contact lens that could do it, you know, something you wear on your eye that's non-intrusive, but you can take it out and only wear it when you want it.
It's pretty neat. I would use it. So every time my wife asks, what are you doing? I just turn it on.
Yeah.
Right now, this.
Right.
And it said, it may seem scary that this technology is in the works and likely just in a few years from being on the market. But if a contact lens camera, and I think that's Sony's approach to this, makes you wince, then what Google dreamed up will make you cover your eyes in fear. And that's because Google skipped the whole wearable concept for the eye camera and opted for the optical implant. You know, and again, this thing is, and then of course the obvious question is what could possibly go wrong? Wow. I don't even need to say what could possibly go wrong because I just think that, can you imagine that we all glom onto this technology like we really want it and then somebody at the top just turns off our vision and we're running around like a bunch of blind mice?
Yeah, really.
And wow. Think of the three of us, three blind mice. Look at us. But anyway, that to me, you know, I just think it's kind of a scary thing.
I
would never get that. And I'll be dead by the time it happens anyway.
See,
that's my new comment.
That's the thing with
I'll be dead by then.
Right. If it's a contact lens, you can just pop it out and then you can see fine.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, that was a news item that I wanted to share. And then continuing on in the tinfoil hat vein, I've got this other one here. Hidden microphones exposed as part of government surveillance program in the Bay Area. This just came out on Friday on the local news station out in San Francisco. Apparently, they had been hiding microphones as part of this clandestine government surveillance program. I think at the bus stop in various locations, they had these little microphones hidden so that it would pick up conversations. And I think they were trying to pick up, and I can understand in theory what they're trying to do because they're trying to catch conversations of these people that were, you know, doing bad things.
Yeah.
But you know, this stuff in the hands of people without any checks and balances, just tends to creep into the area of, overreach.
That's the whole Snowden topic. I mean, if he's shown us anything, it's that what we thought was true is true.
Exactly.
So, and because they were trying to prove that real estate investors in the San Mateo and Alameda County areas were guilty of bid rigging and fraud and use these recordings as evidence. So, you know, and I think, but I have to say though, one of the funniest lines in this whole article was that, that if you're going to conduct criminal activity, just do it in the privacy of your own home. Anyway, and then the only other thing I have is that the Italian military, which I said the word Italian military, that just kind of cracked me up. But anyway, the Italian military, it has started its transition from Microsoft Office to LibreOffice.
Yay!
They've got over 5,000 desktops already. Already on LibreOffice, and they're in the process of converting the rest of them.
Hmm. I think Microsoft hired a new CEO, Satya Nadella. A lot of the reasons because he understands that the world's moving quickly and it's moving not in their favor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, proprietary software. Nope, that's not where these countries are going. And it's not just the, it's not like, cause I hate the argument, oh, they just want something for free. They don't want to pay. I'm like, no, it's so much bigger than that. They're worried about the support, the problems that they're having with Microsoft Office, the, you know, proprietariness of it all mm-hmm. and the potential back doors and things like that is just driving them away from it.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. I agree.
I mean, if they made Microsoft Office open source with access and all that. I mean, if they did, I realize that's not going to happen. But, I've always liked Microsoft Access as a little database development platform for small things.
Mm-hmm.
It just would be a wonderful, if they made it on Linux, it would be nice. If it were open source on Linux, I would pay for it.
Yeah.
I may be the only one, but I would. But it'd have to be, you know.
I don't know. Doing support all day for Microsoft Office, which we do so much of, it's unbelievable how much the program crashes, breaks, and does random things. They mm-hmm. had a licensing problem with like three. We have a lot of computer service and randomly license problems pop up. They had the license.
Sure.
We just had to go through the renewal process of the license for no reason. Microsoft had no idea why the license broke. They don't have an answer. It wasn't too hard to fix, but it did disrupt those people's work, and it did create a bill that we billed them for fixing Office on 3 out of 20 computers in the same office. They're all on the same Office 365 program. No reason why these three computers. Microsoft has no answers to why they broke.
Mm.
We just reloaded
it
and
fixed.
365. Yeah.
That's the problem.
That's what we're talking about on the way in here. It's just so many problems at Office 365. Yeah,
I would never go with that. I mean, the Office, I think I've got 2013, whatever it is, on my Windows machine at home,
mm-hmm.
and I had the option to go to 365, but I'm not doing that.
Yeah, a lot of my clients are buried deep in it because they've got so many macros they've written. They've built so much of their business on the advanced programming features of it with the macros and custom forms that there's no easy switch for them. They can't just jump on the LibreOffice. There's no, oh, we'll just use LibreOffice. No, it doesn't work like that. That's they would have a lot of time and are not willing to invest in it. And of course, their users, their answer is, we have 20 people who are non-technical people here that know Office. This is what they've used for 20 years of their job.
Yep.
So.
Understood.
Yep.
Okay.
It doesn't make change easy, but it has to happen.
Right.
Anyways, moving on. Got another news item or?
Oh.
Seeing you clicking.
I'm done.
Do you want to go, Tony? You want me to start?
I was looking at that, you know, that picture I took at PenguinCon. I said the brain behind PenguinCon.
Yes, I like that.
That big crystal, there was the lights were changing. It looked,
I think it was pretty cool.
Yeah, it looked like it was out of some kind of science fiction thing.
I don't know if that was part of PenguinCon or that's just in the building. I was never clear on that. It didn't have a label on it.
Yeah.
On which?
Look on her Google Plus. There's a picture of that giant art. It's an art thing.
It's an art thing. It was in the executive office. EMC where some
I
of the.
I think that was just part of the building.
I think it is too.
But it was so cool looking, and
it
I love artistic displays of lights.
Yeah.
So. All right. Well, I'm done.
Well, I'll start with the Ubuntu -support -status command.
This is the interesting and mitigate.
Yes, mitigate. So if you drop to the command line, open up a terminal and type in Ubuntu -support -status, you'll get a status of all the different things that are supported and not supported on Ubuntu. And what that is all the packages.
If
you're running an LTS version, because
now let me stop you for a second, Tom. So you run that, is it going to give you this huge list?
It gives you a summary.
should you pipe it to like?
It's rationally. It even breaks down percentages of what percentage of your software is packet is then. But then it does have several command line switches for things like listing only unsupported packages.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, if you're running the 1604 LTS, there's really not much on that list. But if you load third-party repositories, they'll tell you that these are not supported. But this is where the little hang-up comes in. If you're running, let's say, version 14, which is still supported with a 1404 LTS, you may find that some things are not supported and have security holes. But you're going, wait a minute, long-term support says they're going to patch it. No, if you read the fine print, they're patching everything in the main repositories and not the other ones. For example, VLC. You may be running that on your 1404. There's a security pull from it from a few years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's not part of the main repository. Therefore, you have an old non-updated version with security holes in it.
Okay.
So what you need to do is be careful of that because they're supporting the core of the OS. So you're getting the security patches. But for anything outside of the main repository, they aren't updating it. So that's something to be aware of. And I didn't know that. I just assumed if there was a security fix, they pushed it through. And I started getting into the mechanics of it. And this all started as a discussion on Reddit that brought it up. It's not a, there's no article about this right now. But so it started as a, you know, just discussion on Reddit with a few people. I'm like, that's interesting. Never really thought about it. Now I always run the latest version, so it's not as much of a concern to me. But for a lot of people who just want that stability, they go, no, I don't upgrade because I'm afraid it'll break this, or I have this app pinned or something like that. Be aware of what's on there, but it's really easy to do. You could even set up a cron job to email yourself. These are the unsupported packages, and someone probably could write a clever script that says, pipe the unsupported package list through the vulnerability list and give me a list of what's broken on there and either remove it. So it wouldn't be too hard to figure out. But so if you're someone who decides they really need to run an older version, no problem. Be aware of this, that things outside the main are not supported, as in you may have open vulnerabilities in your computer.
Yeah, that's a really cool idea to have a script like that. That way, because if you don't use it, it says, here's the unsupported ones that have problems.
And you can go.
And if you don't use it, then you can say, just uninstall those and you're good to go.
Right. And you should always be reducing your threat surface by eliminating anything you don't use anyways. But sometimes it's tedious and there's a lot of packages on there. So you could always just remove all the unsupported packages too, as long as they didn't break other things. But you should be aware of that, especially if you're running this on server where it's more public facing on the internet.
Yeah, that's good to know.
Yeah. All Winner, which is sounds like a cool name, but it's a Chinese system on a chip company who decided that they needed to have a backdoor into a kernel that shipped with their system on a chip distribution. So if you are using any All Winner chips or you're an importer doing
you're an all loser.
All loser here. So that was interesting, though. But through open source and code auditing, it was caught. And they said, what are you guys trying to slip in here? And someone also pointed out that it's a specific init script that's in there that enables the backdoor. So just by simply deleting that script or disabling that script out of the init scripts, that's another way just to bypass it. Because you need that script to activate that backdoor that they inserted in there. So
yeah, and all it took was the phrase with no spaces, root my device.
Yeah,
to get access.
Really?
Yeah, you just say root my device.
Yeah,
and just so people aware, an SoC is a system on a chip. It's basically a single, well, it's similar to Raspberry Pi, a single chip that runs everything. And where these are popular is all these IoT devices and these, you know, smart light bulbs and everything else, and smart stoves and toasters. So you can have a rooted toaster. And it sounds bad, but I don't know if you've seen that someone figured out how to hack one of the refrigerators and make it catch fire in your house by cycling it on and off fast enough.
Really?
Yeah, they found out that that you could send commands to turn it on and off, and if you did it fast enough, it would cause the compressor to overheat and potentially cause a fire. So now there's a risk for connecting your refrigerator to the internet, which I can think of no. I won't lie. I have none of this stuff in my house.
Why would you want your refrigerator connected to the internet?
I can't find a compelling reason.
What I think is cool is how it will track of what's in your fridge and what's not.
But you can put little chips in your. You can put little chips. There can be little chips on the packages in there or whatever, and you can just read that. I just think there are certain ways to implement technology and certain ways not to.
But that's what it would be. I mean, the reason they have it smart is so that say you're not at home.
But it's not part of a refrigerator infrastructure. That's the key piece.
Oh, right.
And if you're not at home, you know, if you can't figure out a little list, oh my God, how did we ever survive to this point? You know, I mean, we are just, technology is dumbing us down and then it's going to snuff us out.
well, no one, it'll be like that show. No one will know what to do. Like, there's not food in the fridge. What do I do?
Oh my God.
Is it because I didn't put money in the bank, or is it because I didn't? Is it disconnected offline and it forgot to restock itself? I
mean, but no, right. Yeah. But seriously, though, is say, you know, we live in a nice area where there's a grocery store, you know, 5 minutes away.
Yeah. That's like going to the grocery store.
But where I grew up is, it was a little more rural, and it was a 20-minute, half-hour drive.
Okay. Well,
you know, so say if I'm at work all day, and then it's 20 minutes home. Mm-hmm. Well, instead of to go home, check to see what I have in groceries and have to drive back.
Oh my God,
you know,
I have no beer.
Right, exactly. You know, should I get beer for tonight? You know, and it'll tell me right on the app, you know, without having to go home. Or, you know, because in the morning I forgot to check before I left for work. You know, so.
Well, I think we're really happy. Yeah. But I think maybe, and maybe it's done this way, that it's just, it's sort of like on your home network. You can't get into it unless you, and maybe that's how it's set up. I've not I have not purposely not done any research on it because I will not. I don't even want a smart TV. As Chromecast is as smart as it's going to get, and I look at that suspiciously.
Right.
So.
Yeah.
So Tom, we've trashed that story. Let's move on.
Trash that story. Move on to next one. No more Internet of Targets. We have the YubiKey 4 coming out, which sounds exciting until you realize they decided to go closed source. So YubiKey, which is known for being an open source security device, which the nice thing, especially when we're talking about security devices that lock down a lot of our passwords and do, you know, the special authentication systems that the YubiKey supports.
Yeah.
We've always prided the fact that it was on open source, so the code could be audited and we can understand what was going on. Well, they've decided to go closed source and the community is not happy.
Fork three.
It's the hardware device. That's the problem.
That would make it a little more
But don't
difficult.
Worry. There's other companies that will pick up the slack. I haven't really done a big review on them or anything, but NitroKey is an open source alternative. They apparently are capitalizing on the fact that YubiKey is going closed source, and they're going, hey, guess what? We're over here.
Right.
Yeah. No one was buying our product, but now suddenly everyone cares about us. They're a competitor for YubiKey. Does a lot of the same things. Like I said, I haven't done dug deep into the research, but obviously this is a concern with YubiKey. You know, my understanding after I read some of this is that they're just going to be closed sourcing the next version. And I'm like, I don't get it. And I think Google just wanted us to say this. Parsi McParseface.
I saw that and immediately laughed.
Yes. And it's a play on Bodie McBoatface and the controversy related to that, if you hadn't heard about it. This is what happens when the government lets the people try to name something.
Right.
We come up with a dumb name and... Yeah, but there's a whole other topic. But so Google chose to name it this, which is not as fun when Google names it. Everyone's like, I was like, this is so stupid. This is annoying. Why? It's only good when the internet and the public vote up a name, not when Google goes, hey, we'll play on words.
What
is that? Parsing McParseface has gone completely open source, and what that is, it's a parsing. It's a syntax grokker. Is it grokking? Where you parse regular language, and then called grokking.
Grok.
Yeah. Anyways, regular language parser. So our AI overlords can take over sooner and understand what we're saying because computers have a hard time speaking human. Humans have a hard time speaking human. Our language is very diverse and there's a lot of context that needs to be done. This is a open source, completely open source from Google that helps support that. It's going to help hopefully AI development and create smarter things so we can just tell our refrigerator to buy us milk and they'll understand what kind of milk we should get because they can parse the language and look up things and have more context. So definitely kind of neat.
I drink rice milk.
Oh, well, they would know that.
Amazon sells rice milk, so you're good there.
Hey, speaking of Jeff Bezos, sorry, I made that little jump. Did you guys see that Donald Trump is in a little tiff or kind of was knocking him?
Mm-mm.
I was going to post something on Google Plus and say, careful, Bezos has drones, but he didn't. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Yeah, well, that's what I have for the news. So the parsing thing's kind of interesting because I think it is too. But that's a whole other topic of can we replace Congress with AI?
Right.
But you had mentioned like I think before showing a law firm that had hired an AI lawyer.
And yes.
This would be really, really important in uses like that where they want to parse lots of text, especially when it comes on the legal text, to make sense of it and make some predictions.
Draw conclusions from it. Yes. And in talking with, most of my adult life, I've been involved in the legal industry. Mm-hmm. My company, those folks were our customers. And it's very methodical. And so it kind of lends itself as far as legal research and that type of thing. I see it really replacing a lot of the research attorneys that go in and do that kind of heavy lifting as far as evaluating case law and marking it up and that type of thing. I see those folks as being out of a job. Yeah. I better call some of the people I know that do that.
And a few years ago, I had a case I was fighting against the city on acquiescence of property that I had acquiesced because I had owned the house for long enough. I had acquiesced the property that my fence was on. And I was
you
on the.
Acquiesced it?
Yes. Basically, the laws, though, if you have a piece of property that you maintain for over 11, not 7, all people forget 7, over 11 years, you now have the rights to that property. Now, there's several, because this is a fence, mm-hmm. obviously you want some case precedent. So I took the time to research and I Googled it and I found three different cases that went to the Michigan Supreme Court wow. over property acquisitions and put that in and presented it to the city to state my case so I could win the case. But it is one of those things I look at. It could be automated. I had to do a lot of reading on mm-hmm. each case to try and find it. And Google keyword search and Google Scholar helped me a lot because Google has a lot of those cases published. But that's where I think some of this can really be helpful for doing that, because it's got to parse a lot of mm-hmm. Legal language. I had to make sure I understood what some of the words mean. But that's, I think that's really a cool concept, Jordan. And you can replace, like you said, some of the research side of it, because our entire legal system is based on precedents. Well, we've got a lot of precedents going back over hundreds of years, which means we have a lot of cases to go through.
Oh, yeah.
And they're all digital now. It's unbelievable. I mean, this is, I was using court rulings that were for the state of Michigan regarding acquiescence and fence lines that were going back to the 60s and 70s. Wow. But there's no one overturned, and that case that's been cited. What I was doing is referencing, and I would find an acquiescence case and they would cite the other cases, and you then can then find that case and then find all the other cases related to it by all the times that case was cited as a legal and then the rulings on it. Mm. But I thought about them like, wow, yeah, I did the research, but I'm like, I bet I'm not the only person with an acquiescence problem, and this could be done algorithmically. And tools like this, I think, are going to be the future where we're going to have answers to legal questions much faster and it'll get to the general public faster.
Nice.
Because I'm just thinking, I really made me think after reading the article and having a discussion with people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's it I get for the news. Enough about my acquiescence case. I won, but kind of.
Well, good job.
Yeah.
All right. Windows and Flash 0 days. Boom, boom, boom.
Boom, boom, boom.
May 10th. They patched a few more problems, and that includes the... with the point of sale systems and stuff, where there's according to FireEye, that there's 100 organizations that had this issue. So Windows went through and patched that, and then Adobe turns around and patches it from everything from 21.0 for, you know, for Flash, or .0.0.226. For both Windows, or for all Windows, Mac, Linux, and Chrome OS.
Yes, Flash needs to die.
Yeah, it needs to die. But
so many websites still use it.
I know.
It's a legacy problem. To me.
Well, not really. The problem is if I've written something and it works in Flash and I'm done with the project and the revenue is generating from the website, do I hire a bunch of programmers to convert it? Or do I just keep reaping the benefits for the revenue I have on the website? And exactly. Is there enough revenue in that website to then pay it? You know, it's a lot of money, a lot of expense. Mm-hmm. So to rewrite everything.
Yeah. Yep. So, yeah, and exactly. That's why it isn't going away as fast as it should be.
No.
It does need to die. Anyway, so the next article I have is Microsoft is disabling Wi-Fi Sense.
Yay!
Yeah. So that was one of the big things with Windows 10, the concerns that it would automatically share out your... Why not automatically?
BitTorrent updates.
No. Wi-Fi senses where it would share your Wi-Fi password with your friends.
Yeah.
And like on Facebook or something. So the idea is that your friends come over and say, you know, can I get in your Wi-Fi? You say, sure.
Except they don't have to. Except they don't have to say.
Yeah. Now they don't have to ask. They can just as soon as they show up, it connects on for you.
Right. Now, it's a weird, the way it works is actually they built some security into it. And why they put this much effort into this feature, I don't know. But essentially, like if you came over to my house, Mary, and then mm-hmm. I used the Wi-Fi Sense to share the password, you can then share it with everyone in your Outlook contacts very easily by clicking a button. And then anyone else that's your friends that come over can automatically connect to that Wi-Fi with the password. But you can't get the password out easily because it actually pre-encrypts it. Mm-hmm. And it also does a weird thing. It creates a special network that doesn't let you access local devices. So,
but do you even really trust it?
No, but not at all. But like I said, it's a lot of effort went into this as a product, as a selling point, and Microsoft admitted they don't use it. Nobody's using this thing. Mm-hmm. Like, we put all this effort into it.
Who the heck authorized it? Jeez,
that's the kind of stuff that goes on in there. Yeah, like this was. Why can't they just make a better product? We spent a lot of time on this. Yeah. Why? Can you just make it crash less? Or you've seen the Windows 10 update that stopped the news lady I posted on my Facebook?
Oh, yeah.
That she was trying to do the weather and it popped up.
Oh yeah, the updates.
Yeah, to update to Windows 7.
Which everyone can, if you are a Windows 7 user and you've seen those updates, you can celebrate because July Microsoft's stopping the free upgrade. And no one's rushing you into tents. Everyone's applauding that the annoyances are going away.
Right. You know, I think I probably mentioned in a previous episode that I got that little WGX dashboard to completely disable and remove. I have not been prompted for a Windows 10 upgrade in a long time on my Windows machine. It's wonderful. I get those normal updates, which now I go through and read to make sure that they're not trying to sneak something in there.
Yep.
And that's our listeners don't remember what we're talking about, it's on the grc.com website. Is it .com? Right. Yeah.
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 Yeah. It's Gibson Research Corporation. And he's made a couple things that make it really easy to turn that off.
Yep. And I have a blog post about it as well.
Cool. All right. Another article I have is Wendy's is breached. Did you guys hear about that?
Wendy's,
the restaurant.
Really?
Yeah, it was actually just 2 or 3 days ago. This is an update on that. And what it was, 5% of their
Do they activate the refrigerator on and off to burn it up or what?
No, actually their POS system was hacked with malware.
Whoops.
And so there's a breach of 5% of their restaurants. And I was trying to read on it. I didn't see where they were, you know, whether it was here or whether it was, the system was called Aloha. So it made me think it was in Hawaii, but I doubt it.
No, Aloha is one of the most popular point of sale systems for restaurants. I have a lot of clients that use it. It's one of the more premium ones. And the problem with, as most point of sales I run into, we had a few pizza places, admin and password was the RDP login. Or POS, POS was the user on a lot of them, and password and password 123. It's unbelievable how weak the passwords are.
Wow. Not to be confused with POS.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And they use VNC sometimes with no username and password only.
Wow.
And VNC, they use the free version. It has no encryption or anything. That's how they were remote. That's how they would do the support for remoting it. We just supported the hardware, and we were always flabbergasted how easy we were because we could see the passwords, and we would like, oh, I can just log in this remotely without loading our nice. We use a very high security remote connection tool, but it has its own certificates. And these guys just like, oh, we just like VNC.
Right.
Oh, by the way, we take credit cards on this. That always scares me.
Yeah. So that's what I. I'll have links in the show notes. So check out those articles.
Real quick on the topic of Wendy's. I don't know if you heard this. Wendy's has, I think, 6,000 restaurants that are eligible to get their new kiosks, which eliminate people. You're going to be able to do the ordering on touch screens at the counter. Yeah, Wendy's just announced that.
Huh. I guess that's their answer to the $15 an hour job.
Right.
Minimum wage.
Oh, so they work really well. I was expecting, because there's a lot of people that don't know what the hell they want. It drives me crazy because they just I'm at the counter after standing in line for 10 minutes and they stand at the counter and I'm about 5 more minutes. And I'm like, no, I need a line for people who like, you know, have their stuff together. But anyways, but I was told it works really well because they usually line up a whole lot of them at once of the kiosk. Some people can just stand there and stare all day. Like, do I want this pickle or not? I'm not sure.
This pickle. But, special orders must upset them.
They generally are basically large Android touchscreens. And I think it's in Europe. And a few people had started commenting that they work really, really well. And they said, it's nice because you walk up, you touch your stuff, and you go get in line waiting for your food. And some people just stand there forever staring at it. So it kind of solves the problem because they can put a bunch of them together in a row. And that's usually how they set them up.
I'm sure some of those folks don't exactly know how to proceed. It's like when I first got in front of the big Coke machine where you press and you select all the flavors. I'm thinking, I got to do something fast so people don't think I'm a dummy.
Yeah. Well, it's like the waitress never comes. It's always like 3 times if I go to my wife that the waitress has to come by. And then sometimes, do you want me just to pick something for you? I just want to ask her. Like, so my wife's always just staring at the menu. Yeah. We've been here before, you know, right? So I might want something different.
May I order for you, my dear? Yeah. You know.
Anyways, moving on.
All right.
All right. And the last one I have is the industrial cybersecurity. How much is enough? And actually, it's not an article per se, but it's a webcast. And it's going to be this week, May 18th. So hopefully I'll have the show edited and posted by the time this happens. But if you're watching on YouTube,
if you're listening to this and it's May 19th, first listening, yeah.
It's on the articles on securityweek.com. So
that's on Wednesday?
Looks interesting.
Yeah, that's a good topic. We're getting more into the security side of things and coaching and training our clients. And this is a huge growth industry because, one, just like I said, we have entire bunches of pizza chains using VNC with the word password and no username. Security's not, it is kind of hard, but there's so many simple things that we've done. They say the cybersecurity industry is the fastest growing part of the computer market. Absolutely huge growth. And I think you were there, Tony, at the guy from one of the other one of the panels was talking about spoofing your own employees to see how many of them would click links.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, doing some of the internal testing. And, you know, that's great for large companies that can do that, but there's a big growing demand to come and check whether or not your employees. I know some of the universities like Wayne State have a training program where they try to spoof the teachers and professors and see what they'll click on. And it's an internal process they do because they send them the training when they click on it.
Yeah.
Which I, as I understand, sending professors to training because they click on links doesn't go well.
Right. Yeah. It's not spoofing. It's phishing.
Phishing. Yeah.
Phishing your own employees. Yeah.
So yeah. Phishing your own employees.
Yeah. Sending phishing emails to your own people just to see who and get stats of who actually clicks on it or not. And what was interesting is after the 2 hours or whatever, they had like per minute stats.
Oh, yeah.
But after 2 hours, people just started clicking on it just because. Just to say, oh.
Once they found out it was a game in the office, people were just clicking on it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because put something funny at the end of it.
Yeah, too. It was funny because then it says, if you click on it, then it comes up like it reprimands you. It yells at you. You shouldn't be doing this, you know. And then, but at the end of the email, it says, right in the very bottom of the email, it says, this is a phishing attack, you know, for testing security. And if you've gotten this far, then good for you. It was fun.
All right. So. Hey, you know, one other thing I wanted to mention as far as news goes, I don't know if you guys heard about this, but null.io, it's a crime forum. Oh. Apparently they were hacked. It's a forum for brokering compromised passwords and stolen bitcoins and other sensitive data. It was hacked, exposing login data, IP addresses, and email addresses. Somehow I just don't feel too sorry.
Yeah.
Right.
It's a little digital tear I shed. All right. So that was one little...
They didn't expose their own email or password database, did they? Apparently
not. Yeah. Yeah. I guess using password was not a good way to go.
Yeah.
So anyway. Well, what do we got next?
Next up. I think it's the end of the show. Music?
Oh, music. All right. What do we have this week?
The outgoing music for this week's show.
It is called Carnival by Branton. So,
all right. Balkan Carnival music.
That's right. I couldn't figure out what to play.
Did you type in Carnival?
I did. I typed in Balkan Carnival music, and this is what we got. So let me get that started. You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This is episode 193.
Snow and Sun.
That's right. This is Tony Bemis.
Mary Tomich.
And Tom Lawrence.
See you next time.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show@smlr.us or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can
bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Gay Wisher Haunty Magoo 5150 and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduke to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy,
and me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comment, and generally being grumpy at LinuxLuddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night for the interactive live show. Visit lhspodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.
The Linux Link Tech Show, live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast. On the web, www.tllts.org. By email, techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC channel, thelinuxlink.net, port 6667/techshow. And Flying Rich is so hot.